During the summer of 2013, 20-year-old Heather Elvis had recently been involved in a torrid affair with an older, married man named Sidney Moorer. When Sidney's wife, Tammy, discovered the affair, she became angry and threatened Heather through text messages. In order to keep an eye on her husband, Tammy began accompanying him to work and would even handcuff him to their bed at night. She also locked his cell phone with a password that only she knew. Eventually, Heather became dismissive of Tammy and told her to leave her alone and that she was moving on with her life. Sidney, at the urging of his wife, explained to Heather that he would never see her again and that she had meant nothing to him. By the fall of 2013, the affair was over, and while Tammy and Sidney left town for a trip to Disneyland, Heather continued working at the Tilted Kilt restaurant with her good friend and roommate, Brianna Worrellman. She'd been heartbroken by her previous experience, but by December, she had met someone new and was excited to go on their first date. Brianna was out of town to visit family for the holidays, but was eager to hear all about the date. On December 17th, Heather went out with Stephen Schiraldi, and by all accounts, the two had a great night. Heather texted a photo to her parents, as well as Brianna, of Schiraldi teaching her to drive his manual transmission truck in an empty parking lot. In the early morning hours of December 18th, Brianna received an upsetting call from Heather. She was crying and talking rapidly. According to Brianna, Heather explained that Sidney had called her and told her he was planning to leave his wife and that he wanted to be with her. She wasn't sure what to do, and Brianna suggested that she sleep on it and not make any rash decisions at that time. Heather explained that she was going to surf the internet for a while and then get to bed, and she'd figure it all out the next day. This would be the last time Brianna spoke to her good friend and roommate. No one heard from Heather the next day, and though her family expected her to call and tell them all about her date, they didn't initially think it was odd. She worked, had friends, and often kept herself busy, and, being a normal 20-year-old girl, she didn't stop to call her parents every day. As the sun was setting, there was a knock on the door of the home of Terry and Debbie Elvis. It was the local police. They had found Heather's car abandoned in a swampy boat landing area known as Peachtree. Panicked, Terry accompanied the officer down to the car, but there was no sign of Heather. Missing from the vehicle were her purse, keys, and cell phone. Terry tried to reach his daughter, but every call went straight to voicemail. Over the course of the next 4 years, there would be many twists and turns in the case, with Sidney and Tammy becoming the immediate suspects. They would eventually face multiple charges, including murder, kidnapping, indecent exposure, and obstruction of justice. Many of these charges, including murder, would eventually be dropped. While much of the community and the Elvis family argued that the Moorers had abducted and murdered Heather, Sidney and Tammy suggested that Heather had been victimized by her own father in order to protect a dark secret. Other names would eventually come under suspicion, and what had at first seemed like a cut-and-dry case of jealousy and murder became a highly complicated story of he said, she said, with fingers pointing in all directions. What happened to Heather Elvis? Frustrated and hurt by the situation she found herself in, did she choose to run away in hopes of starting a new life? Was she ultimately abducted and murdered by the Moorers as revenge for the part she played in the affair? Did Terry Elvis play a role in the disappearance of his daughter in an attempt to keep a family secret buried? Does Heather's date, Stephen Schiraldi, know more than he is saying? Or is it possible that Heather Elvis fell victim to a yet unknown suspect who may have abducted her from the secluded boat landing? This is Trace Evidence, Episode 33, The Disappearance of Heather Elvis. Welcome to Trace Evidence. I'm your host, Stephen Pacheco. Today's episode examines the strange disappearance of 20-year-old Heather Elvis. It's a complicated story, as frustrating as it is detailed. Before getting into the case, just a few notes about the show. Trace Evidence is a weekly true crime podcast focused on missing persons and unsolved murders. We are available across multiple platforms and on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, and many more. Trace Evidence has a Patreon for those of you who wish to support the podcast. It can be found at patreon.com/traceevidence. This podcast is a complete one-man operation, so if you enjoy it and wish to help support it, please check out the Patreon page. I've also set up a one-time PayPal donation link on the main website for those of you who wish to contribute but don't want to use Patreon. Links, information, and more items, including YouTube videos and full episode transcripts, can be found on the website at trace-evidence.com. If you'd like to contact me, you can email me at traceevidencepod@gmail.com. Tweet me at traceevpod, that's TRACEEVPOD. Add me on Instagram at traceevidencepod, or join the Facebook discussion group simply by searching for Trace Evidence Podcast or clicking the direct link on the website. If you have questions, comments, or case suggestions, I'd love to hear from you. As a final note, if you enjoyed the show, please rate and review it on whatever app or platform you're listening on. The more ratings and reviews the show gets, the easier it becomes to find the podcast, and the more attention can be given to the cases that I cover. Today I look into the disappearance of Heather Elvis. This is one of the more complex cases I've explored, with a lot of information revolving around a detailed timeline and cell phone GPS. It's a highly controversial case, which has divided friends, family, and even the community. What seems to be very clear in the early stages becomes remarkably murky over the years. This is episode 33, The Disappearance of Heather Elvis. Heather Rochelle Elvis was born on June 24, 1993, to parents Terry and Debbie. At the time of her birth, Heather was the youngest child, having an older brother. But just a few years later, she would become the middle child when a younger sister was born. According to friends and family, Heather was a sweet young woman who had an affinity for helping others, specifically children, and was involved in the Baptist church, where she would sometimes work as a caretaker for the younger children. Religion seemed to play a role in her life, as she was a believer who worked through the church and also went out on a missionary trip to Costa Rica in 2011. While many girls her age may have been excited about a trip to Costa Rica, Heather was less interested in sightseeing and much more wanted to deliver aid to others. Her father tried to convince her to go out diving while she was there, to see the beauty of the ocean, and while she did take him up on his advice, it wasn't sea life that she wanted to tell him about. According to Terry Elvis, upon his daughter's return, her excitement was about the things she had done for the people while she was there, saying, quote, "She told me how she had traveled to a tiny village and talked to a small woman living in a 10-foot by 10-foot house, with a broken roof and water leaking through it. We built her a new roof, she told me. The lady cried, and then I cried. I've never used a hammer in my life, and I built her a roof," end quote. Heather went down to the local orphanage the next day and spent time teaching the children to read. A caring young woman, Heather seemed to be fun-loving with a big heart. Her father, Terry, wrote an article online about his daughter after her disappearance and described her as, quote, "Heather is like many girls her age. She loves her freedom and she is loved by her friends. A cosmetology student and a talented artist with a brilliant eye for color, she has a selfless heart in everything she does and towards everyone she meets," end quote. Heather had graduated from St. James High School in 2011. And was pursuing a degree in cosmetology. She had an innate ability to find the beauty in things and wanted to spend her time helping others find the beauty in themselves. At the time of her disappearance, Heather was described as a Caucasian female standing between 5 feet and 5 foot 1 inches and weighing approximately 110 pounds. She has brown hair and brown eyes. Distinguishing marks include several tattoos, a 6-inch compass rose on the inside of her left forearm, a 6-inch stylized sea turtle on the left side of her torso, an infinity symbol on the right side of her torso, a small ocean wave on the outside of her wrist, and a sugar skull on her right thigh. She was last seen in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina at 2 a.m. on December 18, 2013. Heather's social media presence presents a specific side of her, with her Twitter standing as a memorial to her life. She would post about music, her boredom with the small town she grew up in, and her future dreams and goals. She had a sharp wit and a beautiful mind with a tendency to go from one subject to the other very quickly. While following her cosmetology goals, Heather began working at a bar and restaurant in Myrtle Beach called the Tilted Kilt, essentially a Celtic-themed Hooters-style restaurant. Brianna Warrelman became friends with Heather through work, and the two hit it off, eventually moving into a condo together. During her time at the Tilted Kilt, Heather would also meet Sydney Moorer. According to local Myrtle Beach news reports, Moorer was a native to the area who ran his own business, Palmetto Maintenance, which operated repair services on industrial equipment at local restaurants. Heather was quickly attracted to Sydney, and that interest was initially held in check due to the fact that Moorer was married and had 3 children with his wife, Tammy. Tammy and Sydney had met while working together at Broadway at the Beach's Hard Rock Cafe when Sydney was 21 and Tammy was 25. They married in 1998 when Heather Elvis was 5 years old, at Ocean View Baptist Church. They would go on to have 3 children, born in 1999, 2001, and 2005. While Sydney ventured out to begin his own business, Tammy became a stay-at-home mom who homeschooled their children and occasionally operated as a part-time travel agent. Their marriage, by all accounts, seemed to be going well, and there was little to signify any issues between the two. Sydney had a few minor run-ins with the law, once charged with shoplifting a DVD, and later for being involved in a fight with his father-in-law. There's been a great deal of speculation about the marriage itself, with many suggesting that the love had long gone out of their relationship, and that, by the time Sydney met Heather, he was more so just going through the motions, and that Tammy essentially controlled him and guided the direction of their future. Whatever the case may have been, there's no denying that the attraction between Sydney and Heather quickly developed from harmless flirting into a full-blown affair by the summer of 2013. It should be noted that at the time of the affair, Heather was 20 years old and Sydney was 37, while Tammy was 40. The relationship between Heather and Sydney seemed to be moving along quickly, though there was some hesitance on both sides, what with Moorer being married, and Heather being that much younger, and not wanting to be responsible for an adulterous situation. According to Heather's roommate, she was very much smitten with Sydney, stating, quote, "She just sat there and blushed as she talked about him. Over a series of weeks, it was her being like, 'Bree, Sydney did this, and we hung out here, and every time he would come in, she would almost run away.'" End quote. According to further statements from Brianna, the relationship came to an explosive end sometime around October of 2013, when Tammy discovered her husband's indiscretions. In an interview, Brianna stated, quote, "When the whole thing was found out, it blew up like a bomb. Tammy was livid, texting Heather, sending Heather pictures of her and Sydney having sex. I personally never saw them. I told her I didn't want to. Tammy in her phone call saying, 'You're going to stop talking to my husband or else.' It wasn't 'or else I'm gonna do this.' It was just 'or else.' So it wasn't like Tammy had specifically made a threat, necessarily. It was, 'Leave my family alone.'" End quote. The discovery of the affair seemed to enrage Tammy, possibly justifiably so, who lashed out hard against Heather with a series of harassing text messages. All of the anger and the rage culminated in a three-way phone call between Heather, Tammy, and Sydney. According to Brianna, Tammy arranged the call in order for Sydney to end the relationship and to make it clear to Heather that things were over and that she had meant nothing to him. In her statement, Brianna said, quote, "Tammy called Heather and said, 'You're going to end it with my husband.' And so she put Sydney on the phone and sat there while Sydney and Heather talked. They ended things on the phone, but Sydney made comments to Heather and said, 'You were nothing to me. You were just someone who spread your legs,' and basically tore Heather apart as a human being and who she was as a person, and made her feel horrible about herself." End quote. According to an article written in the Charlotte Observer, Tammy's wrath wasn't specifically reserved for Heather. In response to the affair, Tammy is alleged to have focused more closely on her husband and ways in which she can ensure nothing like this would ever happen again. According to the Observer, Sydney's comings and goings were extremely restricted, with Tammy alleged to have handcuffed her husband to the bed at night so that he couldn't sneak out. It's also been speculated that Tammy put a password lock on Sydney's phone so that he couldn't use it without her permission, and she began accompanying him everywhere he went, including going along to businesses he was servicing through his company. While she was keeping herself busy with watching her husband's life, she began to once again torment Heather. Tammy sent a text to Heather late in October reading, quote, "Someone's about to get their ass beat down. Your bitch is about to take his last breath. You can tell me where you are right now, or I will find out another way. That way won't have a great turnout for you. I'm giving you one last chance to answer before we meet in person. Only one." End quote. Followed by another text reading, quote, "Hey, sweetie, ready to meet the missus?" End quote. Heather didn't respond until November 1st, saying only, quote, "I think you're a little obsessed with me. I'm nobody you need to worry about anymore." End quote. Tammy responded on November 5th, saying, quote, "By the way, Dad no longer owns a phone." End quote. And Heather responded back, but only with a period. According to prosecutors, November 5th also happened to be the last day that Heather would see Sydney in person. Details are scarce about how prosecutors are sure about that date and what the interaction was. On November 19th, Tammy, Sydney, and the children left town on a cross-country trip to Disneyland in California, and they wouldn't return home until December 11th. During this period of time, Heather began the process of moving on with her life. Though she'd been heartbroken over the situation with Sydney, she also knew that it wasn't really going anywhere, and despite his previous statements, she knew he was never going to leave his wife. She dealt with the heartbreak and slowly dug herself out, opening back up to the world and the possibility of meeting someone new. Although Tammy had been a bother in the past, Heather thought that she would move on eventually and she wouldn't have to deal with the harassment for too much longer. Heather's roommate Brianna was going out of town in December to visit family for Christmas. According to her, it was around this time that Heather began really lifting out of her funk and beginning the process of dating again. According to Brianna, Heather called her and explained that she'd met someone. In an interview, she stated, quote, "It was supposed to be the first official date since after her relationship with Sydney had ended. I asked her what they were going to do, and she said, 'I'm not sure, just excited.' She texted me during the date and said, 'My date is teaching me how to drive a manual car.'" End quote. The date Heather went on that night was with a man named Stephen Schiraldi, who will become important later. Brianna wasn't the only person Heather texted that night. Sometime between 9 and 10 p.m., Heather's father heard his phone chime out that a message had been received. According to Terry, the message was a photo of Heather sitting behind the wheel of a manual drive truck, and beneath it was the message, quote, "Just learn to drive stick. I'm a pro." End quote. Terry would go on to explain that he owned a manual truck, which Heather loved, and he had wanted to give it to her, but all of his attempts to teach her to drive stick had ended disastrously. Terry would say, quote, "It was funny each time, but now she was driving one and so very happy." End quote. Neither Terry nor Brianna had any idea that this would be the last image of Heather that they would ever receive. According to Terry, Heather's first date was one which she enjoyed very much. Outside of being taught how to drive a manual transmission in a parking lot, she and her date had gone driving around looking at Christmas lights, which was one of Heather's favorite things to do around the holidays. According to police reports, Heather's date dropped her off at her condo between 1:30 and 2:30 a.m., and this is the last time anyone has seen her alive, though these times would be debated later. Police would later track down and interview the man she went out with that night, who submitted to a polygraph test, which he passed. Police felt he was likely not involved in any criminal activities, nor did they have any evidence that he'd been involved in Heather's disappearance. What is known is that that night, at approximately 1:35 a.m., Sidney Moore used a payphone located at 10th Avenue North in Myrtle Beach. Sidney placed a call to Heather's cell phone, and according to phone records, the call lasted 4 minutes and 53 seconds. The call has been heavily debated, with Sidney initially denying he made the call, though later admitting it when security camera footage was discovered by investigators and showed him in the booth at that time. According to Sidney, he called Heather that night to tell her to leave him alone. Interestingly, there doesn't appear to be any record of Heather making calls or attempting to establish any contact with Sidney in the days or weeks leading up to that call. Heather's roommate has a different take, saying that Heather called her at approximately 3 a.m. and was crying. According to Brianna, quote, "When I asked her what was wrong, she told me Sidney had called her. He said he had left his wife, he missed me, and he wanted to see me." End quote. Brianna explained that she tried to talk some sense to Heather, saying, quote, "Don't ruin it. Don't throw away how far you've come in the past month or so for him." End quote. According to Brianna, they had a back-and-forth discussion about it, during which time she advised Heather to think about it and to sleep on it. Heather is alleged to have said that she was going to do just that, that she was going to spend some time surfing the internet, and then she would go to bed. This is the last time Brianna would ever speak to Heather Elvis. In order to maintain some sense of exactly what occurred that night, I'm going to follow the official timeline, which has since been mapped out by investigators and later through court testimony. It should be noted that there are some conflicts between the timelines which have been established, but this timeline appears to be the one prosecutors followed. At 1:12 a.m. on December 18th, Sidney Moore was spotted on surveillance footage taken inside of a Walmart. He purchased a pregnancy test. It's also been said that he may have purchased a cigar at the time as well. Approximately 20 minutes later, Sidney makes the aforementioned call from the payphone. The call lasts just under 5 minutes, and surveillance footage also verifies Sidney being in the phone booth at that time. At approximately 2:29 a.m., phone records indicate that Heather called back to the payphone, though there was no answer. Between 2:42 and 2:56, Heather's phone pinged at Longbeard's Bar and Restaurant in Carolina Forest. At 2:57, her phone was located on Augusta Plantation Drive, though at some point, Heather's direction turns around and she is moving in the opposite direction. At 3:01, Heather returns to Longbeard's, where she remains for the next 15 minutes. Immediately upon leaving, at 3:16 a.m., the first call is made from her cell phone to Sydney's, but the call isn't answered. Heather arrives home at her condo between 3:16 and 3:19. Her phone pings indicate that she remained there until at least 3:24. While at home, at 3:17, Heather places another call to Sydney's phone. This time, there is an answer, and the call duration is 4 minutes and 15 seconds. During a later trial, the prosecution would argue it was entirely possible, and even likely, that Tammy was either on the call or listening in. Between 3:25 and 3:37, Heather's phone travels to the Peachtree boat landing site. During her travels, at 3:36, a surveillance camera located at a private residence captures a dark-colored Ford F-150 traveling toward the boat landing, heading from the direction of Sydney's home. The camera is approximately 1.7 miles from the Moorer residence. It should be noted that, at this time, Sidney Moorer owned and drove a black Ford F-150. The vehicle was later swept by investigators and processed for evidence, though none was found. By 3:38, Heather's phone pings at the boat landing, and two calls are made between 3:39 and 3:40 to Sidney's cell phone. At 3:39, another surveillance camera captures the Ford F-150 approaching the boat landing. Heather attempts another call to Sidney at 3:41 a.m., and then all cell phone activity suddenly stops at 3:42. Her phone can no longer be tracked beyond that time. Whether or not it was turned off, lost service or power, or was destroyed at this time is unknown. Between 3:45 and 3:46, the previously mentioned surveillance cameras capture the Ford F-150 again, heading back in the direction of the Moorer residence and away from the boat landing. The next day, on December 19th, no one hears from Heather. Though it wasn't completely unusual for Heather to not reach out every day, her family does find it a little odd, considering she'd been on a date the night before. They expected that she'd want to tell them what had happened, considering how excited she was and the image they had received of her learning to drive a stick. As the day grew longer and darker, it became even more curious. According to Terry Elvis, late in the evening, there was a knock at the door. According to Terry, the police were at the door and asked him if he was missing any vehicles. He pointed towards the driveway, noting that all of their cars were accounted for. At this time, the officer asked him about a dark green Intrepid, which he immediately recognized as Heather's car. According to Terry, the officer explained that they had found Heather's car abandoned and parked sideways at the Peachtree boat landing. Terry took the extra set of keys to Heather's car and went along with the officer to allow them access into the vehicle. His level of panic was rising, and he couldn't think of a reason why Heather would have been there or why she'd have left her car behind. Upon arriving at the scene, there didn't appear to be any signs of a struggle, and the vehicle was in fine shape and working order. The inside of the car was described as being a mess, though Terry explained that Heather was somewhat known for not keeping her car very neat. It should be noted that since Terry unlocked the vehicle, he and the officer searched through it, essentially contaminating a possible crime scene. Missing from the vehicle was Heather's purse, cell phone, and keys. Terry immediately began placing calls to her phone, but they went straight to voicemail. Terry explained to the officer that it was extremely unusual for Heather's phone to be turned off. Afterward, he was allowed to drive the vehicle home, which would ultimately become a point of contention since it wasn't properly processed at the scene nor photographed in the way that it was found. Fairly early on, investigators suspected foul play in relation to Heather's disappearance. When it became light out the next morning, on December 20th, they initiated a search of the area in and surrounding the Peachtree boat landing, though they didn't come up with any clues or items to indicate that anything had happened there. Over the course of the next week, multiple searches were conducted, including a large volunteer effort which took place on December 27th. The area around the boat landing was heavily combed, and again, search parties came up completely empty. During this time, the family established the Facebook page Find Heather Elvis, as well as offering a $1,000 reward for information about her disappearance. Days later, this amount would increase to $10,000. At its peak, the reward for information about Heather was at $30,000. At this point, it became clear to many involved in the investigation that there was a high likelihood Heather had met someone at this location and had likely gone along willingly with the person or persons who may have ultimately been responsible for her disappearance. Due to Heather's social media presence and the expanding world of Twitter and Facebook, multiple posts and pages were made in relation to her disappearance. Tips began pouring in, though for the most part they led nowhere. Police had the difficult task of having to track down each tip, not knowing whether or not they were being given vital information related to the case, or being sent on a wild goose chase. They also had their share of internet trolls to contend with, which ultimately resulted in a pair of arrests on January 28, 2014, over a month after Heather's disappearance. The men, Garrett Starnes and William Barrett, were arrested for interfering in the investigation, but after multiple interviews, the charges were dropped. Authorities had determined that they were simply looking to be trolls and had no knowledge or information of value to the investigation. After 2 months of investigating leads, searching for Heather, and tracking down thousands of anonymous tips, police continued circling back to Sydney and Tammy Moorer. The deeper their investigation went, the more reasons they found to connect these two to Heather's disappearance. In their initial conversations with Sydney, he lied about his whereabouts that night and denied making the call from the payphone. Later, when evidence was presented confirming that it was in fact Sydney who made the call, he alleged that the call was made to tell Heather to stop bothering him and to leave him alone, though he had no explanation for the call Heather made to his cell phone later that night, which was answered. In his first interview with police, when asked about his whereabouts, Moorer stated, quote, "When I go to sleep, I'm handcuffed to the bed. Tammy's the only one with the key," end quote. In early February of 2014, Sydney Moorer filed multiple police reports alleging that on several occasions while driving, vehicles driven by unknown individuals had come upon him aggressively and fired both automatic weapons and shotguns at him. While police were considering Sydney a possible suspect in the case, it appears that the word had gotten out, and many locals didn't take kindly to it. Whoever had fired at him, if indeed the incidents were true, was never discovered nor charged. During this time, as police were digging into Heather's disappearance, Sydney and Tammy quickly became their prime suspects. On February 21st, authorities executed a search warrant at the Moorer home. The search took place at 7:30 a.m. By 11 a.m., both Sydney and Tammy were booked into the J. Reuben Long Detention Center. A total of 6 arrest warrants had been issued for the couple. The first pair of warrants were for indecent exposure, which stemmed from 2 separate incidents in which investigators alleged that the couple had engaged in illicit activities in public areas. Another set of warrants alleged that Sydney and Tammy had obstructed justice in relation to their investigation into Heather's disappearance. According to the obstruction warrants, on December 20th, 2013, Sydney is charged with, quote, "providing and creating false, misleading, and/or inaccurate information regarding the disappearance of Heather Elvis and his activities in the early morning hours of December 18th, 2013, end quote. Tammy's obstruction warrant had similar statements. Both were also arrested for kidnapping. On February 24th, 2014, in a press conference held at 10 a.m., it was announced that Sydney Moorer was being charged with the murder of Heather Elvis. According to the warrant, both Tammy and Sydney had done something to Heather, quote, "unlawfully, without just or sufficient cause, and with malice aforethought," end quote. Although authorities wouldn't reveal the details, they expressed that they had found evidence when they searched the couple's home, which led them to believe that they now knew who had kidnapped and murdered Heather Elvis. Captain Dale Buchanan with the Horry County Police stated, quote, "We have evidence that will be processed with us. SLED is assisting us with processing some of the forensic evidence. Is some of the evidence DNA? Yes," end quote. Over the course of the next 2 years, there's a great deal of legal wrangling taking place on both sides of this case. There are arguments over bail arrangements, with bail ultimately being set at $100,000 for each individual, and the requirement of electronic monitoring devices to be attached when bail is met. Heather's family protests and files a petition to have the judge removed for allowing bail to be set, though this doesn't provide any fruitful results. The defense argues for a speedy trial, saying that it's their client's constitutional right. There is a lot of back and forth, and then suddenly, on March 16th, 2016, the murder charges are dropped. The charges for obstruction are dropped against Tammy, though they remain for Sydney, and the kidnapping charges are changed to being pending. The indecent exposure charges are also dropped against both. On June 20th, 2016, Sidney Moore's trial for the kidnapping of Heather Elvis began. His obstruction of justice charges were separated from the kidnapping charges and require a separate trial. It was during this kidnapping trial that new information came out that it was possible Heather may have been pregnant at the time of her disappearance. Jessica Cook, Heather's friend and supervisor at the Tilted Kilt, testified that she noticed Heather gaining weight and that Heather had taken a pregnancy test which had come back as inconclusive. Both sides argued their cases, with the prosecution alleging that Sidney had every reason to want to kidnap or harm Heather, while the defense took the position that authorities had tunnel vision for Sidney based on his previous relationship with Heather. Ultimately, 4 days later, the jury declared a mistrial when they were hung. According to multiple jurors, the vote was 10 in favor of a guilty verdict and 2 in favor of a not guilty verdict. During the trial, the judge had issued a gag order. It was brought to the judge's attention following the trial that Sidney had violated the gag order when he spoke to a local media outlet on the second day of the trial. Sidney was sentenced to 5 months jail time for this violation on July 29th. However, on September 28th, Sidney was released from jail early for good behavior and earned work credit. Sidney was again in court for his obstruction of justice charges. The trial ultimately ended on August 30th, 2016, and resulted in Moore being found guilty of obstruction. The jury deliberated for only 1 hour before returning at 5 p.m. with a guilty verdict. Sidney was sentenced to 10 years in prison for lying and impeding the investigation. When asked for comment following the verdict, Heather's father stated, quote, "It's amazing to see, finally, the judicial system working in the way it's supposed to. It's taken a long time to get where we're at, and there's a long way to go," end quote. It was also announced by the prosecution that they wouldn't be stopping there, and they intended to pursue a second trial following the hung jury in relation to his kidnapping charges. In November of 2017, Sidney's lawyer filed a motion asking to be relieved as counsel, citing that the relationship between he and his client had deteriorated and was no longer workable. Kidnapping charges are still pending for both Sidney and Tammy, though court dates have yet to be set. During the course of the trials, and throughout the years since Heather's disappearance, a great deal of information has come out about the Moores' possible involvement. One piece of evidence which set off a firestorm of speculation was a private message sent via Facebook from Tammy Moore to a friend in relation to her husband, his affair with Heather, and the disappearance. In this message, Tammy stated, quote, "Well, Sidney cheated on me in the months of September and October with a psycho whore who has since went missing, and now her crazy daddy is threatening to kill my children and Sidney," end quote. Throughout the message, Tammy refers to Heather as a hoe and Sidney as stupid. In his own social media posting about Heather, Sidney didn't do himself any favors, stating, quote, "Heather was not a relationship. Heather was not a girlfriend. Heather was not a fling. Heather was not a mistress. Heather was a girl that chased me at work and traded oral sex for pumpkin spice lattes," end quote. He would go on to allege that he believed it was Heather's father, Terry, who had fired shots at him and stalked him in the years after Heather's disappearance. Also, in this statement, Sidney would allege that Terry not only sexually assaulted his own daughter as early as 4 years of age, but that he had a criminal history and likely was the one responsible for Heather's disappearance. Sidney wrote, quote, "You can feel sorry for a family with a bad reputation and a dark, sinister past all you want. This is not about them. They wronged their daughter. They wrote her off a long time ago and never looked back. Feel sorry for Heather, not those who were ashamed of her, not those who would go to any length to cover their involvement in all of this," end quote. During the course of the investigation, many questions were raised about Terry Elvis. While he puts forth the appearance of a God-fearing Christian who loves his daughter, reporters and investigators alike have dug into his past and pulled out information which shed somewhat of a dark cloud over his public persona. There have been allegations that Heather had been sexually assaulted by Terry when she was a child, and had plans of coming forward with this information. It has also been suggested that Terry was a racist and displeased with Heather's former relationship with an African-American man, as well as the fact that he knew of her affair with Sydney and disproved hating Sydney. Again, much of this information is very speculative. An alleged former girlfriend of Terry's from the 1980s made allegations that at the time they were together, Terry may have been running drugs and that he devised a scheme to burn down their trailer located on a property which is part of Petrie Landing in an attempt to get insurance money. Further searches into Terry found an arrest for simple assault and battery in 2001, as well as multiple charges for fraud dating back to the 1980s. Some have even gone so far as to suggest that Terry had been misappropriating money received to assist in the search for Heather. They allege that Terry purchased two new vehicles and paid off his $200,000 mortgage, as well as purchasing a great deal of expensive clothing. Among other things dug up in this search into Terry's life were social media posts about disposing of a body, where he states, quote, "Don't use concrete. Use topsoil and sand mix. Cover with leaves or yard scraps. The concrete is a dead giveaway for where you buried them," end quote. There has also been evidence unearthed showing that in the weeks prior to Heather's disappearance, Terry purchased a knife from eBay just a short time before his comments about how to get rid of a body, and that he also owns property in Peachtree Landing, just yards away from where Heather's car was found abandoned. It should also be noted that Terry's brother works in law enforcement, and many believe that he was involved in steering the case towards Sydney. It was later alleged that Terry's brother was also fired from the Horry County Police Department for tampering with evidence. While much of this information is disturbing, if true, it essentially adds up to little more than circumstantial. Authorities have never indicated any suspicion was cast on Terry in relation to the disappearance of his daughter, and none of his other children have come forward with accusations of molestation or assault. Though his former criminal charges cannot be argued against, there does appear to be little here to suggest that he was involved in the disappearance of Heather. I can't confirm it, but a confidential source alleges that Terry was polygraphed twice and that he failed the first time and the results were inconclusive the second. Again, without the ability to verify this or without a direct statement from authorities, this has to be considered pure conjecture. The dividing line in the public has been a harsh one. The Moorers have their supporters who have gone out of their way to hurl accusations against not only Terry Elvis, but also the prosecution and authorities for what they believe was a tunnel vision investigation. Heather herself has become the victim of a great deal of insults and so-called slut-shaming, targeting her as a homewrecker and going so far as to allege that she had a drinking problem, used illicit drugs, and may have been involved in prostitution, though no concrete evidence has ever been brought to the surface. On the other side, the Moorers have been depicted as a crazed family, with Sydney as a man who took advantage of a young woman, and Tammy being a violent and angry betrayed wife who wanted revenge on the younger Heather Elvis. However, court proceedings and trials have resulted in not only charges against the Moorers, but a conviction against Sydney. Interestingly, though police initially ruled out Heather's date, Stephen Schiraldi, as a suspect, their investigation of her cell phone travels began to raise some questions. When they initially spoke to Schiraldi, he was cooperative and passed a polygraph test. Later, when mapping out Heather's movements on the night she disappeared, they began to find discrepancies between Schiraldi's story and the GPS locations of Heather's phone. According to a confidential source close to the investigation, he alleges that when police went to Schiraldi to follow up, he refused to give them his cell phone or grant them access to its records. It was also discovered that not long after Heather's disappearance, Schiraldi removed the seats in his truck, changing them out for bucket seats. This is the last location that photographic evidence exists showing Heather alive, and has led many to speculate that the removal of the seats could have been done in an effort to dispose of forensic evidence. The disappearance of Heather Elvis is a bizarre case with a lot of twists and turns involved. As one might expect, in a situation such as this, a few theories have risen to the surface. In terms of media exposure, Heather's case has been in the press a great deal, and the more information that comes out, the more people find themselves picking a side. There are four essential theories when it comes to her disappearance. The first theory is that Heather ran off, in some attempt to escape a troubled past and begin a new life. Supporters of this theory point to social media posts she made about difficulties with her parents and her unhappiness where she was living. There is also a speculative belief that Heather may have been so heartbroken over her breakup with Sydney that she just wanted to get away. The second theory is that Heather's own father, Terry Elvis, was involved in some way in the disappearance of his daughter. Proponents of this theory point to his criminal past, the highly speculative statements that there may have been some kind of an improper relationship, as well as accusations of Terry misappropriating funds garnered specifically for the search into Heather's disappearance. The third theory is that Heather fell victim to someone we have yet to discover. Perhaps a stranger, a friend, someone she trusted who managed to skate away without being noticed because of all the chaos surrounding her former relationship with Sydney Moorer and the questions about her father. Many support this theory because of the lack of a body, and the belief that the only reason Heather's remains have not yet been discovered is because the real perpetrator of this crime has never been accurately identified. Many believe that the investigation's focus on Sydney and Tammy distracted from evidence which may suggest the involvement of yet an unknown individual. Some have even gone so far as to believe that Heather may have fallen victim to the man she went out on a date with that night, Stephen Schiraldi, who in the last few years has become a subject of great scrutiny. The final and most popular theory is that Sydney, Tammy, or both were involved in the abduction and murder of Heather Elvis. Obviously, there's a great deal of evidence which points to Sydney having obstructed justice, lying to investigators, and impeding the investigation, for which he was ultimately found guilty by a jury of his peers. Tammy's involvement stems from her angry text messages sent to Heather, as well as her bizarre behavior in terms of watching her husband and handcuffing him to his bed. Both Sydney and Tammy made inflammatory social media statements, which did little to endear them to the public, and neither has ever adequately expressed any kind of sorrow for what happened to Heather. Quite the contrary, both have been very explicit in defining her as a sexual tool and nothing more. The disappearance of Heather Elvis is a frustrating case in which many people have lost sight of the true core. A beautiful and loving 20-year-old woman went missing, and rather than the focus being specifically on what may have happened to her, the court of public opinion has become a mudslinging contest. The Elvis family obviously speaks unkindly of the Moorers. The Moorers speak unkindly of Heather and her family. The evidence about the affair has caused many to label Heather as a troublemaker or a slut, despite any real knowledge about what exactly happened there. An affair doesn't occur when only one person wants it to happen. It should also be noted that Sydney was much older than Heather when the affair began, and it's very difficult to accept his statements about being harassed and pursued by a younger woman that he alleges he was unable to keep at bay. If one is going to engage in an illicit affair, it's difficult to accuse only one member of that relationship of wrongdoing. In the 4 years since Heather vanished, there have been multiple court cases and charges filed. There has, however, never been a trial for murder, and those charges were subsequently dropped. Oftentimes, prosecutors will drop these charges if they can't ensure a victory because they don't want to become a victim of the double jeopardy law. Many believe that were Heather's remains ever recovered, those murder charges would come back rather quickly. At the end of the day, a young woman vanished without an explanation. Her family is left wondering what happened to her and have sadly accepted the likelihood that Heather is no longer alive and may never be recovered. They spend each day hoping for new information and pray that someday justice will be served and that they will learn the truth about what became of their daughter. The disappearance of Heather Elvis is one of the more frustrating cases I've ever worked on. I was aware of this case prior to researching it, but I initially thought of it as a more cut and dry case. Though it remains unsolved, all evidence that I'd been aware of seemed to point to a particular set of suspects. Court cases and newspaper articles all seemed to indicate that these two were likely responsible for what had happened, and though murder charges hadn't been officially filed, and Heather herself had never been found, I honestly avoided this case because I thought it seemed very direct. I was wrong. The more I've dug into this case, the more I've found that frustrates and confounds me. Each name I've researched has shed suspicions that I wasn't aware of previously, and following the suspects in timeline is an ever-branching story with twists and turns around every corner. My frustration exists on two levels. One is the utter complexity of those involved, and the investigation itself, which seems to dismiss a lot of evidence in favor of a particular theory. The other is Heather herself. At the center of this story, when you cut through all of the theories and speculation, the suspects and their motives, is a young woman who had a bright future that was taken away needlessly. It's easy for many to sit in the moral high ground and judge this girl based on her actions and her involvement in an extramarital affair, but how many of us at the age of 20 were making reasonable choices when it came to our love lives and desires? I know people to this day who make poor choices in this regard, who are much older and have a greater level of experience. Heather has become victimized, not only in the crime that was committed against her, but in the court of public opinion. People are too quick to dismiss someone based on mistakes that were made or choices that they disagree with. We all make mistakes. It's the only way to learn anything. And much of the comments I've read through social media in regard to Heather have disgusted me. Regardless of what mistakes may have been made, no one deserves to be taken away from their life, their family, and their dreams. Before I get into the theories on this case, I wanted to provide a quick summary. Normally I wouldn't do this, but considering the complexity of the timeline involved, the suspect pool, and the court cases, I wanted to touch back on all of that quickly to help find our bearings. I threw a lot of information at you in this episode, and I can understand how easy it can be to get lost. I've gotten lost in it a couple of times myself. This is a case which needs charts and graphs to really keep up with. Heather Elvis was engaged in an affair with Sidney Moorer from the summer of 2013 until October, when his wife Tammy discovered it. Following the discovery, Tammy berated and insulted as well as threatened Heather through text messages. Tammy then began monitoring her husband's life, accompanying him to work, and even handcuffing him to their bed at night. On December 18, 2013, Heather vanished without a trace. Her vehicle was found by a boat landing in a swampy area located not too far from the Moorer's home. Surveillance cameras showed a truck matching that driven by Sidney heading to and from the area around the time Heather vanished. Phone records indicate that the last call Heather ever placed was to Sidney's phone. In the time since her disappearance, charges have been levied against the couple, with Sidney ultimately being sentenced to jail for obstruction of justice. Other charges remain pending. Though murder charges were filed, they were ultimately dropped. Heather's father has been involved in her case, and it's been brought to light that he has a criminal history and that he has made strange statements online about how to dispose of a body. There's been a great deal of allegations hurled against him, including that he could be violent, controlling, racist, and that he may have molested his own child. There's really no evidentiary basis for any of this, leading most of it to be pure speculation, though his criminal history is documented. While Terry argues that Sidney and Tammy are responsible, they point the finger right back at him. Stephen Schiraldi took Heather out on a date the night before she vanished. While police initially ruled him out as a suspect, it was later found that his details about the date didn't match up to GPS tracking of Heather's phone. Schiraldi passed a polygraph, but some of his behavior following Heather's disappearance has been labeled as suspicious. And when police went to question him further about it, it's alleged that he was less than cooperative. No legal action has ever been taken against him, though authorities have speculated about him being a suspect and then later not being a suspect. As you can see, we have a cast of suspicious characters, all with information they seem to be concealing, and details which oftentimes contradict the official timeline and story of what may have happened to Heather Elvis. It's been just over 4 years since the 20-year-old vanished, and in those years, there's been nothing which confirms what exactly happened to her, nor who is absolutely responsible. Speculation is rampant, and discussions of her case are often bogged down with incendiary comments and attacks on her character, as well as the character of all those involved in the case. While authorities maintain that they believe they know she was murdered and who is responsible, they have never taken that case to court nor been able to prove it. As is to be expected in a case like this, several theories have come to the surface. Unlike many cases, though, most of the theories have a decent amount of information or evidence behind them. Rather than being straight conjecture, there is a lot of hard evidence that can be followed. That being said, each theory contradicts the other, which leads to this highly complex and frustrating case. The first theory in the disappearance of Heather Elvis is that Heather elected to leave town and cut ties with her friends and family. The runaway theory is interesting. Heather had recently gone through a difficult relationship situation, and when the details of the affair came to light, she became the subject of threats and verbal assaults. In addition to this situation, there are comments on Heather's Twitter which have led some to believe that she was looking for a way out. On September 3rd, she tweeted, quote, "There is nothing for me in this town. I need to go somewhere new," end quote. 17 days later, she wrote, quote, "Once upon a time, an angel and a devil fell in love. It did not end well," end quote. There were also mentions of frustrations with her parents and arguments and difficulties with friends. For many, these tweets acknowledge a desire in Heather to run away. On the other hand, at least from my perspective, are these tweets really all that different from the complaints of your average 20-year-old? I think most 20-year-olds experience things similar to Heather Elvis. Broken hearts, disagreements with friends and family, frustration with jobs, and the possibility of jealous lovers. Not every 20-year-old is sleeping with an older married man, but it isn't exactly an unheard-of situation. This doesn't typically result in someone running away. In the case of Heather Elvis, there are more details to suggest she didn't leave of her own volition than there are to say that she did. First and foremost, how many people decide to run off and start a new life by leaving behind all of their earthly possessions, including their main form of transportation? If Heather were planning to run away, why leave her car behind, and specifically, why leave it in an unpopulated area that is miles away from mass transportation or main roads? It doesn't really add up. When you factor in that her abandoned car was found yards from property owned by her father and just a few miles from the home of her former lover, it becomes even more suspicious. Her purse, keys, and cell phone were missing from her car, and all cell phone activity stopped at that location. If she were planning to not be tracked by her phone, why bring it with her at all? There's just too much information which suggests that Heather did not leave of her own choice. She called her roommate in the hours leading up to her disappearance, which could be a poor decision to make if you're planning to run off. In addition to that, she'd been on a date earlier in the night for which she was very excited. She was making it on her own, working, going to school, and back on the dating scene. It doesn't sound like someone who's ready to get away from everything. The biggest clincher for me is that Heather has never been spotted since she vanished. There's been no activity on her social security number. This is a 20-year-old woman, and while I have no way of knowing her level of intelligence, I consider it highly unlikely that in this technological age, she would be able to completely remove herself from the grid and never be seen anywhere. Also, how many 20-year-olds can make it on their own out in the world without some money while severing all connections to their friends and family? I understand this being a theory, and in most cases of a disappearance, it's almost required to be a theory. I just don't find the evidence to be in support of it. This is the least likely scenario to me. A possibility, yes, but highly unlikely. The second theory in this case is that Heather's own father, Terry Elvis, may have in some way been responsible for her disappearance and/or have more information than he's provided to authorities. Looking over the information available, there is certainly a dark past behind Terry. FBI records indicate arrests for fraud, and police records show at least one arrest for assault and battery. Does his past necessarily indicate that he would do something against his own daughter? No. Everyone has skeletons in their closet. Perhaps not this many, but there's no connection between actions he took before his daughter was born and then her disappearance over 20 years later. It's interesting, and it may raise some eyebrows, but without further evidence, it's highly circumstantial. Information about Terry in relation to the time of Heather's disappearance has also made some curious. There have been allegations that he took money meant to aid in the search for Heather and used it for personal gain. Without financial records to prove this, it's essentially speculation. Whether or not Terry bought clothes, cars, and paid off his mortgage with those funds, I can't prove right now. It's curious, certainly, but at the same time, life does go on. That doesn't necessarily mean he used money from Heather's funds to do these things. I can understand people viewing this as suspicious, but again, it's all finger-pointing with little hard evidence, if any at all. Beyond that, it comes down to the fact that Terry owned land right near where Heather disappeared, made some questionable comments on social media, and purchased a knife. There was information from a confidential informant who claimed that Terry had failed one polygraph and that another had been inconclusive, but this has never been proven, and police have never commented on it. Confidential or anonymous sources, oftentimes, I find difficult to buy into. Now, some have argued that because Terry's brother was involved in law enforcement, he was protected from being investigated, but I also find this hard to swallow. Yes, there is corruption in police departments, but how much sway could one officer have? The family are always questioned and considered suspects initially. It's just normal in the early stages of an investigation. Authorities likely looked at Terry, and I believe if they'd found enough information to make them suspicious, they'd have dug deeper. Though Terry may not have always been the clean-cut Christian man he presents himself as, that doesn't mean he's a killer either. In terms of hard evidence, there's been nothing revealed which links him to the disappearance of his daughter. He has an alibi for his location that night. He wasn't spotted on any surveillance cameras in the area, and there are no records of communication between he and Heather that night. There have been allegations against him that he assaulted or molested Heather in her youth, and while that's very disturbing to consider, again, there is nothing to support it. Some have said Heather was going to come forward with these accusations, and while this is possible, how would Terry have known, and even if he did, would he have murdered his own daughter to prevent it? It should be noted that none of Terry's other children have made similar accusations against him. A lot of the accusations against Terry come from Sydney, as well as from an ex-girlfriend named Karen. Whether or not there is truth to them can't be known for sure. While I understand Terry being a suspect in many people's eyes, I don't see enough evidence to make the link. You have to make the evidence define your suspect. You can't go into it by choosing a suspect and then cherry-picking information to fit him. While I do think Terry should be looked at, and it's obvious that further investigation should be conducted, I don't consider Terry the likely perpetrator of this crime. The evidence against him is circumstantial at best, and extremely speculative in nature. I also don't believe that authorities would so quickly have dismissed him as a suspect if they thought there was more going on here. The third theory in this case is a split theory. Either that Heather fell victim to a yet unknown suspect, or that the man she went out with that night, Stephen Schiraldi, may have been involved. While it's entirely possible that someone could have been involved in the disappearance outside of the known suspects, there doesn't appear to be anything to point in that direction. Investigators seem fairly sure that they know who is responsible, though they can't yet prove it. That being said, it's a possibility that has to be considered. A lovely young woman by herself, in the early morning hours near a boat landing, would certainly be an easy target for someone. From what I gather about that location, it's swampy and frequented by fishermen heading out into the ocean, so it can't be ruled out that someone could have abducted her and taken her out to sea. All of that being said, it does raise questions about why she would be at that location in the first place. The possibilities involving an unknown suspect could be considered limitless. Anyone could have come across her that night and abducted her. It's a lot to consider, but it can't be ruled out. Investigators did look into this possibility, though in their view, it was more likely Heather was abducted by someone she knew. They believe she was lured to that location and went along with her abductor willingly, and was likely murdered when she was taken elsewhere. Considering that there could have been a trust factor, many have considered the possibility that her date that night, Stephen Schiraldi, could have been involved. We don't have a great deal of information about Schiraldi. According to the statements of several people who claim to have insider information, it's been alleged that when he was questioned by authorities after Heather's disappearance, he gave a concise timeline of events, and multiple news outlets reported that he submitted to and passed a polygraph test. For those of you who have been listening for a while, you're likely aware that I don't put a great deal of faith in polygraph tests. They're not admissible in court because they can't be verified to be accurate. That being said, after cooperating and passing the polygraph, Schiraldi was essentially ruled out as a suspect. Later on, though, when a more detailed timeline was mapped out and Heather's cell phone was tracked and its GPS coordinates noted, investigators discovered discrepancies between Schiraldi's story and the locations and times at which Heather's phones were at those locations. At this point, it's been stated that authorities went back to Schiraldi for more information and that he was less than cooperative. He's alleged to have refused to have given them his phone or to grant them access to his records from the night that he went out with Heather. Many considered this suspicious, and rightfully so. If indeed Schiraldi had no involvement, you'd imagine he'd be more cooperative, but you also have to consider his state of mind at the time. Maybe he was paranoid that the police were going to try and push him as a suspect in order to solve a high-profile case. Or maybe there were some illegal activities that night, such as drug use, and he didn't want to get in trouble. Heather, through her own tweets, has established that she had a history of drug use. The one detail which many people have latched onto as a reason for considering Schiraldi is that, not long after his date with Heather, he replaced the seats in his truck. Many feel that this was an action taken to destroy possible forensic evidence, but there's never been much of anything said about this on the part of investigators. Schiraldi was one of the last people to be with Heather before she vanished, and though it's possible he could have knowledge or may have even been involved, there are a few details which make this questionable. We know for a fact that Schiraldi dropped Heather off at home. She spoke to her roommate on the phone after the date and explained that she was staying in that night. If Schiraldi was planning to do something, why bring her home and then try to coax her out later? Also, investigators found no evidence of communication between the two following the conclusion of their date, which makes it highly unlikely Schiraldi could have lured Heather back out. Again, this is one of those instances where Schiraldi should be looked at more closely, but the evidence against him is circumstantial and doesn't really lead anywhere. Authorities may have screwed up early on by not digging into this possibility earlier, but at this particular time, there doesn't appear to be anything concrete to connect Schiraldi to her disappearance. This remains a possibility, and further investigation is warranted, but as of this time, it also seems there is no information which makes Schiraldi a firm suspect. This leads us into the final theory, that Sidney Maurer, Tammy Maurer, or both, were involved in a plan to abduct and possibly murder Heather Elvis. The list of information which ties one or both of these to possibly being involved is quite long. We know that Heather had an affair with Sidney, which Tammy discovered and was not happy about. Tammy threatened Heather on multiple occasions, spoke out against her on social media following her disappearance, and is still facing charges for possible involvement. Sidney seemed to have an interest in Heather, but after the affair, he followed Tammy's directions and spoke out against her, and was involved in sending illicit photos of the couple to Heather as a way to upset her. Following the official timeline, Sidney placed calls to Heather's cell phone from a payphone the night she vanished. He initially lied and said that he didn't, but when it was proven, he changed his story and claimed that he was telling Heather to leave him alone. The problem with this story is that there's no evidence to suggest Heather had attempted to contact him since the termination of their affair. On the night Heather vanished, Sidney is the last person confirmed to have spoken to her, and a vehicle matching the description of his Ford F-150 was seen driving toward and away from the location of Heather's abandoned car right around the time that her cell phone stopped transmitting. It should also be noted that the Maurer home was only a few miles away from the Peachtree boat landing where Heather's car was found. Authorities were almost immediately looking at Sidney as a suspect in this crime. Within 2 months of the disappearance, a search warrant was executed on the Maurer home, and both Sydney and Tammy were arrested. Authorities later stated that they had found DNA as well as other evidence in the home, which prompted their arrests and charges for murder, kidnapping, and obstruction. What DNA they found has never been revealed, so it's unknown whether it was from blood, hair, or something else. Whatever it was, police considered it strong enough to arrest the couple. The murder charges were ultimately dropped, though we can't know why. It's not unusual for this to happen if prosecutors were worried that they didn't have enough evidence for a conviction, and they didn't want the couple to be found innocent, and thus be able to take advantage of the double jeopardy law. The police and prosecutors have been very tight-lipped about why the charges were dropped, but I have to believe that if they felt they had all the evidence they needed, the charges would have gone through. It's also possible that they were hoping to use these charges to make a deal in which one might give up information on the other, or perhaps they would reveal Heather's whereabouts. So far, Sydney has been sentenced to jail after being found guilty on obstruction charges for lying to authorities. Sydney's trial for kidnapping resulted in a mistrial. Tammy has yet to see her day in court for her own charge of kidnapping. As of the current date, neither has been charged with murder, and there has been no further information from authorities regarding whether or not they ever will be. It's entirely possible, considering the previous theories mentioned, that prosecutors believe there's enough room for a defense attorney to create reasonable doubt, and until they have enough evidence to remove that doubt, they will not move forward. We know that Sydney, at a minimum, spoke to Heather that night. Evidence would seem to suggest that he may have met her at the boat landing. Is it possible that Heather went along with Sydney, believing that they were going to run off together, only to end up in a terrible situation where she was murdered? Sadly, yes. Authorities from the get-go believed that Heather had gone along willingly with her abductor, and it may have been someone she trusted. If she still had feelings for Sydney, as had been alleged by her roommate, and also he had truly called her that night with a story about leaving Tammy and wanting her, then this is a scenario which is highly likely. Tammy threatened physical harm against Heather on several occasions and made public statements against her. There was obviously a great deal of anger there, and a love triangle and jealousy are certainly two of the oldest motives in the book. Whether or not Sydney, Tammy, or both played a role in Heather's disappearance cannot be proven at this time, but for many who examine this case, it seems like the most likely theory. The disappearance of Heather Elvis is a tragic story that has all of the buzzwords associated with a bad movie. Love, affair, drugs, money, family, threats. A resolution to this case doesn't seem to be on the horizon anytime soon. And for Heather's family, each day is another they must face without knowing exactly what happened to their daughter and their sister. Heather's remains have never been recovered, and so her family doesn't even have a spot to visit and pray to mourn the loss of their loved one. It's been nearly 5 years, and each one has taken its toll, not only for those who knew and loved her, but on the community as a whole. The Moorer family stands as the prime suspects, while Heather's father and even the man she went on a single date with face lambasting in the public forum as to their own possible involvement. Speculation abounds in heated debates to this very day whenever this topic is discussed. The wheels of justice can turn slowly, and the trials and charges in relation to the disappearance of Heather Elvis are hardly at their end. Prosecutors still have dates to set in order to address Tammy in court, as well as retrying Sydney for kidnapping. Hopefully, someday, we will have the answers needed to sort out this complex and convoluted case. Until that day comes, the disappearance of Heather Elvis remains an unsolved case and stands out as a tragic example of a beautiful young woman taken well before her time.
Case update. Sydney eventually went back to court, this time being charged with obstruction of justice related to the lies he had told investigators about his whereabouts and the phone calls from the night Heather vanished. After a 3-day trial, Sydney was convicted and sentenced to 10 years in prison. In April of 2018, both Tammy and Sydney were indicted on charges of kidnapping by a grand jury. Tammy was ultimately sentenced to 30 years in prison. Sidney received the same sentence when he was found guilty in 2019. Both Tammy and Sidney, under South Carolina law, were given 1 year to turn over information related to the location of Heather's remains, which would result in a reduction of their sentences. While Tammy's year has since expired, Sidney has until September 18, 2020 to produce this information. Sidney has yet to come forward with any information about Heather, her death, or her whereabouts. While the Elvis family finds comfort in the convictions, they long to know what happened to their daughter and to have the opportunity to lay her to rest. Tammy and Sidney continue to maintain that they are innocent and played no role in Heather's disappearance.
If you're interested in finding more information about the disappearance of Heather Elvis, there are many websites and news articles that cover her case. There is also a Facebook page entitled Find Heather Elvis, which was created by her family. If you have more information about the disappearance of Heather Elvis, please contact the FBI or your local police. What do you believe happened to Heather Elvis? Tweet me at TraceEvPod, email me at TraceEvidencePod@gmail.com, or comment in the Facebook group. If you'd like to support Trace Evidence, please visit the Patreon page located at patreon.com/traceevidence. I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Trace Evidence and invite you to check out our website at trace-evidence.com. You can find links to the Patreon, social media accounts, as well as places to go to download the podcast and subscribe. I'm always eager to hear your feedback. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a good rating on iTunes and leave us a review. This will greatly help our reach and bring more attention to the cases I cover. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join me next week for another unsolved case on the next episode of Trace Evidence.